This is the Christmas dinner meeting of the Woman Society of the Central Baptist Church. It will include music by Margaret Smith Scoggin and the playing of the glass harmonica by Mrs. Ada Holding Miller.
Piece of your grandmother's pantry shelf is really an instrument which was blown some 200 years or more ago. It came to me in a very nice way by a woman who was dying of multiple sclerosis and knew it and had no one in the world left. And she called me and asked me if I would like to have it. I went to see her. I didn't know her at all. And it belonged to her sister, who had been a famous pianist at one time. And in turn, she used to sometimes play on this instrument, which is, of course, a portable traveling set. I do not know of any other in existence. Now that's intact, or anywhere near intact. Before that, it belonged to a man from Bohemia, because this is a Bohemian instrument and was blown in Bohemia. The man who blew these glasses blew until he got a perfect C. So you have to start somewhere, so you start with Do, of course, and that's C. This instrument is tuned to C sharp, which makes it very difficult for anyone trying to play with you, because they have to transpose a half tone higher, and I cannot change the pitch of the C without ruining the quality of the tone. Now, before that, this gentleman, who was here a long time, had taught Miss Prell to play, and he went back to his native country, and he said, "Now, if I don't come back, this instrument will belong to you." He never did come back, and so that is how the instrument came to be in the possession of this very wonderful little lady, who soon died after I had talked with her, and she said, "Go and look in under the stairs." It was a funny little cottage in East Providence, and I did, and here were the two cases, and of course they were all dirty and in an awful mess, and I didn't know anything about them, and I still feel that I do not know very much about them either. I'm still learning all the time. Sometime around 1786, a very good composer named Gluck played a concerto on 16 glasses, or bells as we call them, glasses, to the accompaniment of a band. And over and above the sound of that band, you could hear this strange, ethereal, penetrating sound that I hope you will hear tonight. They do not like hot weather or humidity, and they act as a barometer. I can always tell when it's going to storm. And I've had to work very hard sometimes to make them play, and I talk to them and pray over them and scold and everything. And at first voice I had them, I found I could soon play these, the basses and the middle tone. I could not make any sound whatsoever on the harmonic. It took me months. I tried everything. Alum water, people said try alum water, try vinegar, try ginger ale, try everything, and I did, and nothing happened. And so then I realized the awful truth, which happens to most of us, is that the fault was entirely my own, and that I had to just get busy and do some studying and practicing and get the touch. It's a matter of touch. So sometimes I play with the ends of my fingers, and sometimes the flat of my hand, and sometimes the side. Every glass looks to me like a face, and I know where they all go and what each one will do, I hope, and where on the glass to produce a certain quality of tone. And you will notice perhaps that the water goes around with the touch of my hand, vibration of the hand, Now, I read in the book, very little known about this instrument, and nothing written for it. There were things written for Franklin's instrument, which came a little later, but there's nothing for this particular instrument, so you have to make your own arrangement, of course. And it takes something of a musical background to do that. But this instrument was the court instrument of Austria for a great many years. And the finest player was a blind woman. It's a lovely instrument for blind people because of touch. Her name was Maria Kirschgesner, and she had to finally stop playing because, as the book says, this was the old Gross Dictionary, of course, right, that it produced a peculiar nervous disease of the arm. And I thought, well, that is just nonsense. That's just talk. But one day I played out in Shankett Park in a freezing cold church, the old church, which, you know, fell down almost one day. And they built a new one, but it was a cold January night. The room was freezing, the water was cold, and everybody was frozen. And the next day, I had a lump in my arm as big as an egg, which took some time to get rid of. So I found that that was true. Now, another thing that happened was that I read that the instrument was called an instrument of Satan in Austria and forbidden in that country, and is forbidden to this day. The reason is because a man named Mesmer used to put people in the proper state so that he could mesmerize them easily. And this is so, and I thought that that was not true either when one day I unwittingly mesmerized a woman. Now, I needn't tell you that I was paralyzed with fright, and at the time I didn't realize what was happening. But she sat quite near, and I think I'm far enough away so I won't mess my head in the front row. But I won't guarantee not to. But at any rate, she wanted to see how it worked, and I showed her. I was very near, and I was explaining, not paying any attention. I suddenly looked at her and thought she was sound asleep. Fortunately, there was another woman in the room, and everybody else had gone home. And so I said, well, we telephoned her husband to come fast. And he said he'd be right over. He didn't seem at all alarmed, I must say, but he came. And so we decided on the way. She still slept. It must have been at least 20 minutes. And we decided to try psychology. So we said, now, Mary, get up. So she stood up. And we held on to her, I said. So then we said, Mary, walk. And she walked. And finally, when his automobile came, we said, now, here's an automobile, Mary. Get in. She stood up and got into the automobile, still sound asleep. And when she went off with her husband, I don't know what happened, but she never mentioned it from that day to this, nor has any recollection of it. So then I realized that she had been mesmerized. So I'm warned. After this instrument, a group which consisted of 16 glasses of bells set in the table, and I have one at home. You're very limited, though. If you only have 16 glasses, which are arranged on a table, you have to sit down and play the lady's instrument. You're limited to only two keys. You're very limited, indeed, to what you can play. And a great many of these were broken. Those of which are intact are, for the most part, in museums. And a gentleman from Sturbridge Village wrote a fine article last May in the Antiques magazine about it, and we've become great friends, but he's got a set. I have a duplicate of it at home. Which isn't any fun at all because you can't do much of anything with it. But Franklin, you know, who was always inventing something, decided that he would go everybody one better, and so he invented an instrument which consisted of various sizes of bowls, as if they were split in two, from big ones to little ones, and through the center of each bowl ran an iron rod. They revolved in a trough of water, and you pumped with your feet, as you did your grandmother's sewing machine, and that, of course, sprayed the water on the glasses, and you could play quite fast with that instrument. Now, some of the music I've seen from the Library of Congress for that particular instrument, and I cannot understand how any human being could ever play it. It would take two people to play it, because after all, you only have two hands, you know. And there's a limit to what can be done. But that instrument didn't last very long. There is one intact, which I myself discovered in Pittsburgh in a small museum. I went there one day and saw it, and my eyes popped out of my head, and I said, "What's that?" And they said, "We don't know." Well, I said, "I'll tell you what it is. It's the glass harmonica, and it's a Franklin glass harmonica, and I believe it's the only intact one in the whole world." Well, they said, "Well, won't you stay around and play it?" And I said, "Well, if you put up with me for a month or two and pay on with it, I might sing it." Because you have to get a different touch. Now, the touch that I have on the set at home is totally different from this. They're all set and without pins. And you see, these are fastened with little brass pins, on which I'm having a hard time to get anybody to make them, because I have so many that are now gone because they are so old and the wood is old. But the pins, they must be steady. There are certain things you have to do, and I'm giving you a lecture at the same time, I realize, and what you want to hear is music, but they have to be the same height. Otherwise, your hands are going to stumble when you play. Your hands have to be absolutely spotless clean, and so do the glasses. No grease. They won't play with any grease or soap or anything like that. And the shoes have to be right, and so does the table. Everything has to, because otherwise, you aren't going to get resistance to play. Now, without further ado, start with something simple and that the children all like. And this is the favorite lullaby of all the children. Thank you. century air, or an air on the side of the 16th century. You know, to explain it to those who don't know, I think you do. They were pretty sad. You know, they were always in a minor key to start out, but just like the old melodrama, you know, where someone was tied to the railroad track and there was a wreck off in the distance and the daughter had run off with the hired man and everything was bad. The whole family were in an awful mess. But the very last act, about 10 minutes before the curtain dropped, everything is fine. All clears up in one fell swoop. Well, that is the way of the 16th century air. As you will see, it's sad and melancholy, but all comes out right in the end. This is totally... They can play in different keys. Comes back and goes back again and starts rocking the cradle again, and this time the baby goes to sleep. Now, I don't want to play too long, but I told the children to go out of school. I play every year there. And it's fun and loving. This is for children, really. It's a magic, isn't it? Magic, see? Magic class. And all you do, you know, you just put some water in your hair. Something happens. Magic. Just magic. I don't know what happens. I just know it does. Now, I said to the children, not going to play too long today because I don't want you to get tired. And one little fellow jumped right up and he said, I'm tired already. Children upstairs to sing Tannenbaum, you know, or Christmas tree, and telling them why it's a Christmas tree, what it means to be an evergreen tree, why we call it that, and teaching them that it's a Christmas tree, how lovely are thy branches, and you're just as green in winter as you are in summer, and we just love you because you're our evergreen tree, and that's why we call it. Unconsciously, they're learning the words, they're learning Tannenbaum, they don't know it, because we call it Christmas tree. But unconsciously we're teaching them good music. They don't know it now, but they will. When they grow up, they'll say, "Why, I heard that in the old Baptist church in Providence. Wonder what that is." Now we teach them something. So we have a Christmas tree today. The bill in the front row is silver. Well, that is good key. Try that one. Wind her up, you know, and she'd go a little bit and play a little dance. And if you listened, you might hear her wooden shoes. Like me, bad English, but that's Jamaican. Now, it went something like this. So we'll put in some different birds. I think we better add some more water here, too, first. It's quite amazing that as you play, the water gets hot. It goes in ice cold, and the motion of your hands heats up like hot water. Then they don't play as cold. Now, the yellow bird. Now, we're going to put two or three other birds in there. What kind of bird is this, do you think? See now. Then a clock. Yeah, and what's this one? Now, you hear it with a little black cap on right now. Chickadee. You hear him, don't you? This time of year. Well, we'll play the yellow bird, and we'll put in some of the other birds, and you see if you can pick them out now. Thank you. play some carols with, we might find a little music box. It's just a little tiny one, you know, just 10 cents, a little one. And it doesn't play very long, you know. And it, of course, has to run down. But play the same tune over and over and over and over, you know. But not too long, because it's such a little box. I think it's the purest poem you'll ever hear. I know it is. And I remember once playing in some great church when the choir master was so wonderful, Mr. Helen, was there. And he played on the echo organ, and I played off on the sidelines. And I can't tell you what the most heavenly sound I ever heard in my life came out. People stopped, couldn't imagine where they thought angels were certainly coming down from heaven. But this is a pure tone, and this is, I play it single hand because it's no chords, because of the purity of the tone, and it has that ethereal quality that I think spells somehow Christmas.
Thank you.
I'd like to tell you a true hint. You aren't here anymore, and you're familiar with them all, I know. And the funny thing is happening right now, all over the world, at this very moment, there are people who are going through old hymn books and picking out tunes to make jazz tunes out of them, and doing pretty well at it. For instance, the saints come marching in, you know that? That's a good old gospel tune. And the people that have jazzed it up made about $1 million on that one record. So at least, so they're looking in to these books all the time for hymns. I can think of a lot of good old gospel hymns that make wonderful jazz tunes, but I'm not going to tell them about them. Here they'll do it, you know. But days of hymn singing. Just have wonderful hymn singing. I must tell you, too, perhaps you don't need to take all this down to one of them. In Indiana, they have a wonderful fair every year, a great event. And a friend of mine had charge of the music. And in the midst of one of these days, a terrific storm came up, and they were warned everybody to get under cover. And what were you going to do with this mob of people they didn't know? And my friend said, well, can we have one of the empty cow barns? And they said, yes, but can you dig up a piano from somewhere? Yes, they could. So they said, all right, let's have an old-fashioned hymn sing. So the people all began to run to the cow barn. They announced over the loudspeakers it'd be a hymn sing. Well, they thought maybe there'd be about 25, 30 people. How many do you suppose came? 4,000. And so it's become an annual event. People still like to sing and still like the songs they know. And that is an encouraging situation. Now, I'd like to play some of these hymns. Why, I tell you, we can sing one more together. This is the old Vesper hymn, the English Vesper hymn, which is so lovely. No one ever sings it anymore. This one, and I think we can all sing this one together.